Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At that point.
All right, 5 at 5, brought to you again by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, you are dying.
Okay. But aren't we all?
We all are. None of us are getting off this planet alive. But so you're dying. To save your life, all you need is a successful 50-yard field goal to be made. Who will you choose to be the kicker to make that kick?
Kevin Butler.
All right, so you're going to put your life in the hands of Kevin Butler.
Yes.
I was going to say Justin Tucker, but I understand.
If you're going with active guys, yeah, Kevin is like 56.
No, yeah, now. I'm going, yeah, but I mean, take it like it would be Kevin like in his prime. Rookie,
sure.
Chicago Bear.
Yeah, clutch. Yeah, made every big kick at Georgia, 3 for 3 in the Super Bowl. For active guys, though, Tucker would be the guy.
Okay.
But like I say a lot, Brent, when watching him, I mean, it is – so down the middle. It's over the post. If like the post that holds up the crossbar and the uprights there, if the rule was if that post, instead of going up and curling out, if it just went straight up and you had to hit that for it to count, I swear I think he'd hit it a third to half the time.
Yeah, I think he would too. Now, if we're talking about the idea, though, of clutch and a pressure-packed kick, and there's a guy that knows that, like, man, if I miss this kick, this person is going to die, Adam Vinatieri wouldn't be a bad choice.
Well, he split the uprights with triple zeros twice and to win the Super Bowl, and those were only his second and third biggest kicks. The one against the Raiders in the snow, that was the biggest. That was a 50-yarder in horrible weather to tie.
Yeah.
That was serving at 5-6 to get into the breaker.
He wouldn't be a bad choice.
No.
All right, Jeff, you're going to die.
Okay.
To save your life, you need to strike out Joe DiMaggio.
Oh, man. Oh, that'd be kind of sad. He's one of my heroes.
Who's the pitcher?
I might just check out.
Oh, you would rather die than see Jolton Joe strike out? Now, so that's the thing. Like, he was almost impossible to strike out.
He had 361 homers, 369 strikeouts. I think you're going to have to go with a right-hander.
Well, he was a switch hitter, right?
No. Man,
he was a right-hander.
Yeah,
okay.
He was righty. So I'm guessing if you got to go with a righty, I might have to go Bob Gibson.
All right. Yeah, because, I mean, Randy Johnson threw lefty. You don't trust Clemens?
Well, God, that'd be kind of friendly fire there, too, from his days in New York.
Well, but just make him – he'd have to wear a Red Sox
uniform,
though.
Wear a Red Sox uniform. You know, DiMaggio had always said that Bob Feller was the greatest pitcher of that era. He said Feller, and then he got the end of Satchel Paige when everything broke with Jackie Robinson and Larry Doby. He felt that Paige was one of the two or three toughest pitchers he ever faced. But by the time Satchel Paige got to the majors, I think he was in his like mid-40s.
Yeah, I think he was.
But DiMaggio had always said Paige just gave him a devil of a time.
Well, maybe that's your pick then.
Maybe that's the answer.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, though, if it was, in all honesty, like a modern guy, righty, lefty, whatever, if you needed the – Randy Johnson would be the guy, I think. I mean, he's the most intimidating guy I've seen.
Well, especially if there was a lefty, then that's a no-brainer.
Yes.
If there was a lefty hitter.
Yes.
To have
Well, just think about John Kruk, who was an excellent hitter.
Yeah, well, hey, well, what about Nolan Ryan?
Nolan Ryan could get some Ks.
Yeah.
I saw a nifty little thing on him today. This morning, Julio Franco's name came up. Yeah, he was a rookie in 82, and his last season was 2007. Now, he missed a couple of years, but he played 23 years. So I looked it up. You know, the guys who had played the most years, Nolan Ryan played 27 years. I mean, he was on the 69 Mets, and he threw a no-hitter in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, he had his career was ridiculously long. He was on the 69 Mets, and then he beat up Robin Ventura in the 90s. So I mean, like Robin Ventura in 69 probably would have been
like two.
Yeah, just a baby.
So a Dr. Reefstack says, good call on Bob Gibson. What about Maddox?
I was thinking about Maddox too.
I mean, for Maddox, that would be...
He wasn't a power pitcher, you know, but...
No, but he could fool you and make you look bad. And when he was locating that changeup and that breaking ball, the thing with him, that 91 would then look 96. And it had all kinds of wiggle.
Now, do we get Eric Gregg behind the behind the dish so that...
How wide's the zone?
You don't actually even have to throw Jolton Joe a strike?
How wide is the zone?
Talking about guys who played a long time, that does bring up Vince Carter retiring today after a 22-year NBA career that did end in these last two seasons he was playing with the Hawks. But that is... That's lengthy even for NBA standards. I mean, for any sports standards. So.
It really is. You know, you're talking about those years. I guess he was on the Carolina team that went to the Final Four in 97 because that was the game they came in here and beat us. So I guess they went 97 and 98 because I think Guthridge was coaching the game here when they came back and beat us right after Christmas.
Yeah, because that was it was you're fired up thinking that could be Dean Smith and Tubby Smith, or Dean Smith and Tubby Smith, and it ended up being Bill Guthridge and Ron Jersa.
Correct. Yeah. But yeah, Carter, I'll say this for Carter. Dr. J is my favorite player, and obviously I love Dominique, and I'm talking about NBA guys. Dr. J was my favorite player growing up, and then with Neek and with Jordan. I think you could make a case, though, and Connie Hawkins was the first great one, but that Carter, you could make a case, is the greatest dunker of all time.
He's definitely up there. I have a hard time saying anyone other than Dominique was, but Carter would be, I'd put him close.
I always thought, would you agree with this, with the Jordan and Neek? I thought Jordan could jump further, like he could do that foul line takeoff, like Dr. J.
Sure.
I thought Neek could get higher, like the straight up.
Yeah, because like the Neek did the windmill slam and everything.
Yes. So if it was basically, if it was a straight vertical deal, like a high jump, I would take Neek. I would take Jordan and Dr. J in the long jump.
Yeah. But no, so Vince Carter.
Oh, he could throw it down.
98 draft. Number one pick that year was Michael Olowokandi. Vince Carter outlasted him.
Yes. what was the top five of that draft?
Mike Bibby went two.
Okay.
Rafe LaFrentz went three.
Okay.
Antoine Jameson went fourth.
Teammate, yeah.
Then you had Vince Carter, and then right after Vince Carter was Robert Traylor, Tractor Traylor.
Michigan guy.
Out of Michigan, right? Who only played seven seasons. Dirk Nowitzki was in that draft, so Carter outlasted him by one season because Dirk's last year was...
Was it 2 years ago?
Or the previous year, whatever year it is now. Whatever. So he would have been 18 and 19 would have been his last season.
So those, I'm assuming those were the two best guys in that draft.
Paul Pierce was in that draft,
well,
too.
That's three. Yeah.
Pierce
was probably the best one.
Carter outlasted him.
I'd say Nowitzki one, Pierce two, Carter three. Just as far as all-around players?
Yeah, for sure. Because the rest of it after Paul Pierce was, let's see, Bonzi Wells.
Yeah.
Michael.
Where did he go to school? He's a small school guy.
Ball State.
There you go.
Michael Doliak, Keon Clark, Michael Dickerson.
Wow.
Matt Harpering.
Mm.
Bryce Drew.
Okay.
Rosho Nesterovic.
Oh, yeah, him.
Yeah,
I thought you were talking about Albert Albuquerque.
Mirsad Turkan.
Oh, yeah. He would have been my fourth pick.
Pat Garrity. Rashawn McLeod. By the way, the Hawks took him out of Duke. He lasted 3 years.
That's a good pick.
Ricky Davis.
He was Iowa.
Yeah, Brian Skinner.
Really good, yeah.
Teron Liu. So yeah. Teron Liu's been coaching, and Vince Carter's still been playing. Felipe Lopez.
It was Stanford?
He was St. John's.
St. John's, okay. Was it Brooke Lopez who went to
Stanford? Yeah.
Okay.
I guess Brooke and Robin
Lopez.
And then
Lopez. One of them died. It was like a mysterious deal, wasn't it?
No, of the Lopezes? Brooke and Robin?
I thought one of them.
Nah, they're both alive.
Okay.
Yeah. Who are you – I don't know. Who are you thinking of? There is a basketball player. I know what you're talking about that had
was missing for over a week.
Oh, I think I know who it was. It was that guy. Was it Brian Williams?
Yes.
He had played for the Bulls for some, but yeah, he might have been murdered or something.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's who you're thinking of.
It must be, but I thought it was one of the Lopez brothers.
No, they're both still
okay.
Alive.
Okay.
Anyway, Al Harrington went. Sam Jacobson.
Okay.
He played at Minnesota. Vladimir Stepania.
He sounds like a Ruski.
Corey Benjamin. And actually then with the last pick of the first round that year, Nazi Muhammad, played for a long time. So that was a pretty good pick. But
did he play like 12, 13 years?
18,
even?
It says
good
here.
Good God. So that's a guy who, that guy made some money.
Yeah. But yeah, Vince Carter, 19. Think about that. The 1998 draft. So he was drafted. That was basically the last year of that Bulls dynasty. That was his draft that he came out in.
Did he play in the calendar year of 2020 this year?
Yeah, he did, because what ended up being the Hawks' last game, I think the Hawks were playing that night and the word started to circulate that the NBA was shutting down.
Okay.
And so Atlanta realizing like, well, this is probably Vince's last game then, put him in the game, and I think he hit a three for his last shot. So
he played in four different decades, the 90s, the zeros, the teens, and the 20s.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
For basketball, that is, I mean, and I get it, you're squeezing it there with a nine and a zero, but still, that's for basketball. Holy smokes.
Yeah. You know, for his career, averaged 16 a game. Phenomenal dunker. I guess he's one of those Olympics was one of the. Didn't he? He had like a kind of a famous dunk where he dunked on someone.
Yeah, I think did he like jump over a guy's head?
Yeah,
he kind of did a.
I think
split.
That's right. Yeah, but anyway, Vince Carter, talking about guys that played a long time.
Oh man,
NBA is officially retired today after a lengthy career.
All right, this the Brian Williams basketball player, he changed his name to Bison Dele.
That's it, yeah. And he's the one I think that ended up like that. He has a mysterious death, right?
And it says here he died at age 33 in Tahiti.
Yeah,
but he was missing for like over a week,
right? And I think he was murdered.
Yeah,
he was involved in something and got murdered.
Yeah, because there's a story here that the unique life and mysterious death of Bison Dele. Heck, that might be something that you see a 30 for 30 on. Then here's another headline: girlfriend says Williams admitted to deaths at sea. Oh man.
Oh yeah, so he might have murdered someone and then eventually was murdered himself.
Man, this is. Good gosh. You talk about going down a rabbit hole here.
Yeah. But that's who I think that's probably what you
must
were thinking of.
Yeah, it must be.
All right, moving on in the 5 at 5, Jeff. I have been fascinated the last couple of days looking at some of the, these different props that are popping up for a 60-game Major League Baseball season. One of them is home runs. What will be the leader in home runs will have how many home runs, and over under of 20? You go higher or lower than that?
I'm going to go under and say 17 or 18. But if I had to pick one guy to go over, I'd go with my man Juan Soto.
Okay. What about Ronald Acuna?
I got Acuna. I'd say Acuna 15, 16.
He's going to hit all those leadoff homers this year.
Well, that's true. He does see pitches. So attention, Braves. Acuna. Albies, Freeman, 1, 2, 3. Go ahead and take 60 lineup cards and just go ahead and write those guys in the top three spots.
Yeah, that'd be the – in fact, if I was Brian Snitker, I would just go ahead and put that like in ink so it couldn't be changed.
Yes, you've got 60 of these things, okay?
Yeah.
Just 1, 2, 3, just go ahead and – write that in.
Then sit back and relax.
All three games. One of the funniest things you ever texted me was game 7 of that Cubs-Indians World Series. if Joe Maddon would have taken a nap in the third inning, they'd already be popping the champagne.
Yeah, but he got cute.
Yeah.
Had to take Arrieta out.
The guy was dealing.
Yeah, it's almost like, well, I'm in the I got to manage here. I got to do some managing. Like, no, you don't.
Just let this guy just keep on going.
All the managing you did was when you shook hands with the umpires at the beginning of the game and handed them that lineup card.
And that's what, when I think about some of the great, football's a different animal with the strategy. But when I think about, you know, kind of late 90s, 2000s, our era there, two of the great managers slash coaches, Joe Torre and Phil Jackson, they had incredible teams. So much of what they did, it was just managing the egos, getting the guys in the right place, and just putting them in the position to win and staying out of the way.
Yeah. Well, that's one potential interesting little feature of this season, too, when you get into an extra inning situation and there's going to be a runner placed on second base, is if you've got the last hitter, if you're two outs and nobody on, and I don't know, you got a guy at the plate with some wheels, that might not be a bad idea just to say, like, hey, why don't you go ahead and just strike out here, and then you can just be on second base to start the next inning.
Well, let's think about this. Let's say you got a light hitting center fielder who can fly, hitting nine, and you got a, we'll just say it's the Braves. You got Acuña hitting leadoff. And I get NCR, he's an okay hitter, but he's a terrific center fielder. If you try and bunt him on or something, and then let's say he gets to first with two outs, okay, then maybe you try and steal if he makes it, then maybe Acuña gets the hit. There's a big difference between a guy at first with two outs and a runner at second base with nobody out. And again, if it's that nine-hole guy, back to your point, then you absolutely – The odds are better that you're going to score. And listen, it's always going to be that way. You got to go out in second with nobody out. But especially with who's at the plate, I don't think it would be the worst idea. I'd say if you're the home team especially, and you know you're at least going to get to the plate in the 10th.
Yeah. Well, that's just, you've got, you can make two outs and score the winning run.
That's exactly right. But, I mean, there's a lot. You know, you talk about the strategizing too. Then you'd get down to, all right, well, there's a guy at second, nobody out to start extras. Do you walk Acuña? Try and set up, or then, well, Atlanta, then they'd bunt Albies. Okay, well, then we'll walk Freeman, try and set up the double play. I like it. And I think, you know, when you look at other sports, you know, what college football's overtime is, basketball, it's a five-minute period. You know, in the NFL, it may end on the first possession, it may not. So the extra time, the extra periods – and other sports look different, so I don't really have a big argument with extra innings looking different in baseball.
Well, that's what it'll be. Like, in a scenario where you've got, let's say NCRA is batting ninth, and it's they're already in extra innings, or maybe it's the ninth inning or something, and you're looking and you're saying, all right, there's nobody on and there's two outs. So Brian Snitker now has a sign that says, swing and miss.
Yeah, or just, hey, try and hit a home run.
Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, but so, you know, make it either hit a home run or make an out, because right, you'll start the next inning on second base. So that happens. Now, so, okay, Ronald Acuña comes up to lead off the next inning. Now, nobody likes to bunt.
No.
But that would be not a terrible idea, especially with Acuña.
He can run, yeah.
But who also strikes out a lot.
Right.
You know, so what you don't want to do is strike out. You want to at least put the ball in play. But, like, the play there would be to bunt. But at the same time, like, boy, Ronald Acuña, he doesn't bunt.
No, and that's also when you could run into a higher thing. Now, if you're in the bottom of the inning and you got out of the top unscathed, I think the bunting is a no-brainer. If you're in the top of the 10th and you got Acuña up,
you got to score as many as you can.
Then I think, are you playing for the big? And that's so many times why you hear the curse of the leadoff double. It's a real thing, because if you're simply trying to get that runner over to third, if it works, but you make it out, usually you'll get that run in, but maybe you don't. Then the pressure mounts. Or if you say, no, we're going to play for the big inning, if a guy swings and hits a line drive or grounds to short, then that guy's still at second with one out. your scoring percentage goes way, way down. So I think, again, that's why putting the guy at second as opposed to putting him at first, I think makes it a lot more fascinating.
But yeah, because if you don't score in the top of half of an inning, then I mean, the odds are pretty great that the whoever you're playing is going to get that run in the bottom. If they're smart and actually do realize, we only need one run to win now, so you've got to bunt that guy to third, and then you know, basically they're going to bring the infield in or either walk the next two guys sure. and load the bases or do something like that. And but you've got then a runner at third with less than two outs. You should be able to get them in.
So I think a lot of it too, Chris, don't you think, is going to depend on where you are in the lineup. But if you're that visitor, it's kind of like overtime in football. If you've got that first possession and it's fourth and six, it's like you've almost – we got to at least get points here. We got to kick. If you're with the first possession, and I mean, if you're the road team there, I, you know, there's a part of you, and again, it depends on who's up. It's like, well, you know, we need to get as many as we can, but good gosh, we got to scratch at least one here.
Yeah.
So I think the strategy coming into it, I would bet fans will be surprised how many times it happens where that guy from second doesn't score.
Well, in the top half, because that's where that team is in a position where it's just not automatic that you give up and out, get them to third, and try and sure. get them in, because you know your opponent in the bottom half will just end up doing the same thing. You do need to try and score multiple runs, but you also can't. If you get out of there with no runs, then you're probably done.
Yes. So it's hey, to me, it adds more strategy to it, and especially with no DH in the National League. You know, they're not going to be as many strategic moves. So when we do get to extras, I think this is going to be one of those things that fans will wind up liking. Even old dinosaur purists like me, I love it.
Well, yeah, because you know you're not going to have to, like, I'm not going to be sitting around here until, like, the 17th or the 18th right. inning. The odds are pretty good that the game is going to end within an inning or so.
You would think so.
Yeah. All right, there's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.